to the Cup and Saucy Book Club. I'm Jen.
And I'm Zanna.
What's in your cup today, Zanna?
I'm drinking Blackberry Sage from Republic of Tea. It's a staple in our house and my son's favorite tea ever. We normally have it iced, but baby, it's cold outside today. So hot tea it is. And what's in your cup?
Well, first of all, that's one of my favorites, too. So
it's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a good one. And it's really early in the morning when we're as we're recording this morning. And I've got a lot to do. So it's a coffee day. And this time, this is the Francisco Brothers Dark Roast with English toffee, which I really love that because then I don't have to add sugar to it. And I can say, well, I'm actually drinking black coffee.
I love toffee.
Yeah, it's just sweet enough. And it's really nice.
And, it's like my favorite thing ever.
And we have a wonderful guest today, and I am so excited about this. Our guest today is USA Today bestselling author Lainey Davis. She writes steamy contemporary love stories with grouchy heroes, strong heroines, and plenty of fiascos, which is so much fun. She lives in Pittsburgh with her three feral sons, two rescue rabbits, and one tired husband, and probably a tired you, too. And she's excited to find out how much coffee is too much. Well, I'll help you along with that, Lainey, and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So what's in your cup?
Yeah, so I have a cup of La Prima Espresso coffee, which it's my third of the day, which is that's the max that I can do before my eyes start to twitch a little bit.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Do you have an espresso machine or do you do a mocha pot or how do you do it?
I have all kinds of devices.
You're somebody with a coffee station.
I'm in an AeroPress era. Yeah.
Oh, AeroPress. I haven't tried that yet.
Well, this, I felt like I had to get it. I traveled this summer and there was no good coffee where I was, not in the hotel or nearby. And I was like, oh, this can't happen again.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not good.
We have encountered that as well. And so when Zanna and I travel to book events together, I have a collapsible traveling electric kettle. And we bring our own teas for that. And then, you know, as long as there's cups in the room, then we're good to go. So it's a nice little thing and it flattens out and travels really well. And listeners, I will include a link in show notes to where you can get one.
Oh, good. Because I want to get one for myself.
Yeah. So
when we see one another at Readers Take Denver, you can bring your kettle and I'll have my AeroPress. And I'll make you some Pittsburgh coffee.
Nice.
And we will compare. Yeah. It's
and if you like chai, I'll bring the cup and saucy chai blend.
Okay.
You know, we have tried out merch and things, but I think that that's going to end up being our merch. It's that chai blend because it's really delicious.
Oh, I can't wait to taste it.
Yeah. And one of the reasons that this interview happened, you contacted us and we just are thrilled whenever that happens. And it's extra exciting because you found out about us from our patron saint, Erin Mallon. Hello, Erin.
Hi, Erin.
Tell us about how that came about. Was it a conversation? How long have the two of you been friends?
So Erin and I have been chatting online for about 5 months because I am so excited that Erin, Karen Gray, myself, Liz Alden and Ember Lee are writing rom-coms in a shared world this year.
Oh, wow.
Very excited. Looking forward to that. And do we have a working title?
So the series is called Farm to Forking.
Okay.
And my book in the series is book one, and it'll be called Since You've Been Gone. It's a soybean farm in the Catskills.
I love punny names.
Oh, yes.
Punny names are the best. That's wonderful.
Farm to Forking. I just, that's so perfect. And I can absolutely see it. So tell us one more time who all of your collaborators are in this project.
Yeah, I'll try and say it in the order the books will release. So it'll be my book, Since You've Been Gone by Lainey Davis. And then the next author will be Liz Alden, Karen Gray, who's another audiobook world figure. She narrated for a long time as Karen White. Yeah.
Yes.
And then Erin will be book four, and book five will be Ember Lee.
Okay. Oh, wonderful. Wow. That's quite a stellar lineup.
It has been so fantastic. We've been meeting every Thursday virtually to create this world together. And, you know, usually all of my books are set in Pittsburgh. And I tried writing a small town series maybe 4 years ago, and it was so hard because you have to make up everything. And it, I find it hard enough just to make up the people.
Right.
So, so all my books are set in Pittsburgh ever since that, because I know the geography, I know the layout, I know how people kind of behave in this town. And so it has been such an exciting challenge to make up this fictional place, Fork Lick, New York, which is very near Climax, New York.
Just, you know, and before anybody
perfect
thinks,
town.
Perfect town names. And before anybody thinks, yeah, there's no such place like that. Okay, there is an intercourse in Pennsylvania. So
yes, that's true.
Yeah. It's a there's tiny also little, a tiny little place, but it's
There's also Coxsackie, New York, which is real. So
and
Climax, New York, is
that's
real.
Fantastic.
So we've we've been just making up all the little store names and restaurant names and the farm names, and we are just so excited to bring this collaboration to everybody because we think it's hilarious.
That sounds amazing. Yeah.
Oh,
it sounds amazing.
So you have a lot, as you said, a lot of your books are set in Pittsburgh, and I have been to Pittsburgh a couple of times, but I'm not really familiar with the city. And but I'm always enjoy whenever something is set, you know, in a particular city that people know or that is, you know, large enough, when an author makes the conscious decision to either do things that are real, mention real businesses, real street names, you know, and the map is accurate and that sort of thing, and pay an homage to their city. And it's usually people who live in, you know, whatever city they're talking about. Or if they decide to do the other thing and say, this is a completely fictionalized version of, you know, Los Angeles or New York or whatever, and
Pittsburgh,
and or Pittsburgh, and then they don't, but they don't mix it. It's like either or. So when you made the decision to set your books in Pittsburgh, what was your thinking about using real businesses and street names, etc.?
I use real street names all the time. The only fictional businesses are the ones that my characters own and operate.
Right.
You know, pretty much a lot of the other stuff is real. I have, for example, there's a bar near my house called Goodlander, and I try to put them in as many books as I can, and I love writing and editing there. They even gave me their Wi-Fi because I like to hang out there for tappy hour on Wednesdays. And you know, if I'm going to be showing a business in a, what I think is a positive light, I like to hope that it's a good thing to include them. I have my book, Sweet Distraction, mentions a lot of restaurants that have unfortunately gone out of business since then. So that dates the book a little bit, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in a way, too, I like to think that their
preserving
memories,
it.
are preserved in that. There was a book I read many years ago that it was set in San Francisco, which is near where I live. And it was this club that was down the street from where my first apartment was in San Francisco. And when the book released, the bar had just closed. And the author had said that they were specifically doing that as an homage and remembering, you know, that this place existed and it was someplace that was special to them.
It sort of immortalizes the place.
Yeah,
that
it
you
immortalizes
love.
The place, you know? And
yeah.
That's a beautiful thing to be able to do, you know, that and especially if you are really fond of that city that you're from, you know, then this is, I remember this, it's a time capsule, you know, it can be a time capsule too. So I love that.
I moved to Pittsburgh for graduate school as an adult. It has everything about a place that I have always wanted to live. It's a city, but the individual neighborhoods feel very insular. Maybe that's too harsh a word, but everybody's in everybody's business within the little neighborhoods. And I love
and
that.
Big city, small town.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And the different neighborhoods. The different neighborhoods have a different feeling to them. So depending on the setting or tone of the book, I might choose a different neighborhood to set it in based on if it's a fancy, wealthy character or more of a blue collar type of hero.
Yeah.
Yeah. And each of those neighborhoods have their distinct flavor.
Yeah, I so far have read only Foundation. I enjoyed it very much. But I did sort of feel like the city was its own character in that book, and I think you did that really well.
It actually I'm so happy
sent me to
hear
Google
that.
Maps a couple of times.
Oh, I love that. I loved writing that book, and all the running trails, all the things that happen on foot in that book, you know, they're all based on the real neighborhoods and places and running trails.
Yeah, I was looking at the parks and I'm like, I wonder where that would
Yeah, and in addition to the city being a character, so a couple of your series, so the Stagg brothers, the Brady family, I'm loving the family dynamics within each of these books that's sort of threaded through, because each one is not, you know, it's a standalone in that you can read the story complete by itself, but you know, you get reintroduced to characters that you've met in other books, and the dialogue with the families is really great. Particularly between the brothers. And because you said you had three feral sons, I'm assuming that some of this dialogue is taken from Slice of Life?
Yeah, definitely. And I used to read romance series and think, nobody has that many children. You know, the family across the street from me has five sons. I have three sons.
Wow.
And these big families just tend to be boisterous and pick at each other. And I am sort of always eavesdropping and making note.
So, yeah, that then answers my question. I was like, okay, so this is a little bit slice of your own life, but this is all also people you know. And are in your neighborhood, it sounds like.
Or elements, at least.
Yeah, I think maybe the flavor of the dialogue. None of my characters are necessarily based off of real people, but maybe something that happens in the book might have happened to somebody I know in real life.
Well, okay, and the Brady family series, they're all, the brothers anyway, are all engineers. And they're not grouchy, but they're definitely like strongly opinionated. And
yeah.
I have to say, having had a stepfather and a father-in-law who are both engineers, you nailed that. It's just like the precision of it, I don't know, the way that they speak, the way that they see the world, it was just right on the money. So is that mean
oh,
you
thank
have
you.
Do you know engineers have engineers in your life? Because I'm like, somebody has at least seen or talked to them for a long time to get that.
Yeah, so funny story, I you know, before I was writing romance full-time, I was doing corporate communication work, and I had been hired to do a corporate history for a family-run boutique engineering firm.
Okay, yeah.
And they fought with each other in meetings. The one dad guy was always eating pistachios, and they told me these stories that I was like, I cannot put this in your marketing document that
no.
you
right.
hired me to write. So I have,
but
these...
but I'm definitely filing it away for future books.
Yeah, totally. And I, you know, obviously I fictionalize them. They're not real people, but the concept of this family-owned engineering firm where the people fight with each other all day at work, that really stuck with me. And I wanted to recreate that. And I spent hours and hours with them over the course of a year writing their corporate history. And I then fictionalized that world.
Yeah. But kept enough of the realism that it's always my favorite thing when particularly when you have a series where there's a family dynamic, you know, as an only child with an only child, I don't have this as my experience, but I have been around enough families that when you look at something like that and you say, I know these people, you know, even though this is entirely fictionalized and, you know, you may just take incidents or snippets of conversation or something like that. But when a reader can or a listener can say, I know these people, you know, these are people that I have met. That is where the connection's made. And you wrap it all up in some of the best dialogue. I am a sucker for good dialogue. So thank you for that, Lainey.
Well, thank you for the compliment. And I have to say, I know you're an audio lover. I really think that Tom Taylorson and Carly Robbins elevated my series in their vocal performance.
Oh, yeah. They were fantastic. Oh,
absolutely. Absolutely. And Carly is a friend of the show. So, you know, that was when I started to look through your catalog and saw how many of them she's done. That was just like, yes. and it's always it's nice to, you know, listen to new narrators, and some of them were new to me. But then to have that one anchor that I can say, you know what, they picked this as well, so and said yes to the project, so that always speaks well too.
Yeah,
and all of the characters that she narrates, your heroines, your female main characters are always just right there. They do not let the you know, the boss holes get away with anything.
Oh, thanks. I kept saying, I'm sure I need different narrators for the two books in the series where the hero and heroine are in their 50s. And my goodness, you know, they're doing these voices of the characters who are late 20s, early 30s. And then they do Mick and Kellen Brady, who are in their 50s. And it was phenomenal. I just am so in awe of their vocal talent, and I love it.
When you have the kind of folks that you have on your books, those people can be anybody. They can be anyone. They can be in their 20s. They can be in their 50s, and it's still true, you know, because the performance is true. I love in your books that you do have characters that are in their 50s, and that, you know, love happens to us at any time. It can happen to us at any time. And it really is, it doesn't just happen, you know, in college or right out of college or, you know, when you're in your 20s, because I don't know about the two of you, but I was still trying to figure stuff out in my 20s and I knew nothing. So,
yeah.
Is that a conscious decision on your part to take the age spectrum with your characters?
I was always going to write a book for Kellen in that series. He is a widower and he's a cinnamon roll. And when I planned out the series, he was getting a part. And the patriarch figure, Mick Brady, was sort of a foil throughout the series, really a jerk. mm-hmm. And yeah. I was going to be all done with the series after Orla's book. And I started getting all these emails. When is Mick Brady getting his redemption arc?
Oh.
And I was like, he can't be redeemed.
He's the villain of the piece. How could I?
He has cheated on his wives before. Like, it is known he cannot be redeemed. And I just kept getting the emails. So his book was actually the first one I wrote as a full-time author. I got to leave my day job, and faced with endless hours a week of time, I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm going to redeem Mick Brady. So...
I'll have to get to that one because, yeah, I can't see right now without having read that one yet. But you're right. Everyone deserves a happy ending.
Yeah. And he definitely fits the definition of the morally gray.
I was proud of how it turned out. I think I found a way to redeem him. And it's been important to me to show all different kinds of characters. And so I have some neurodiversity representation in Mick's book. And the series includes a lot of disability representation. I've got a character with type 1 diabetes. I have characters who are postmenopause. And I actually got to interview somebody who owns a sex toy shop to talk about, like, what are the kinds of lube that someone who's had a hysterectomy would need to use. So not only was it important to me to show these things on the page, but it was also really fun and interesting to learn about the kinds of people that I was showing.
Yeah, because there really aren't a whole lot of books written at you know, once a woman hits menopause, it's like life is not over. So
as somebody who's in that category, I feel like there need to be more of those.
And also that's where a lot of readers are. You know, that is the demographic for much of the romance genre. So it is not just the childbearing years, you know, it's
for sure.
All of it. And, you know, really Pittsburgh and, you know, there's real businesses and everything, but you still build a world in all of this. And
thanks.
It's a beautiful thing to see. So I want to live in that version of Pittsburgh. So
well, you could come anytime.
See Laney's Pittsburgh.
Yeah. See Laney's Pittsburgh.
And not just the stopover tourist.
Yeah.
Or, well, one of my favorite things was we were sort of well known because we had this massive sinkhole downtown that swallowed a city bus.
I was wondering about the sinkhole because that just seemed so on point. Because in the South, we have those kinds of things.
Yeah. Well,
that's what happens when you build in a swamp.
Well, I guess you can't see me right now, but I'm holding in my hands a 3D printed City of Pittsburgh bus that is a level. And a small business here started making those after the sinkhole incident. And I just thought I need to write that into a book, and I would like it to be about the engineers who fix the problem. So,
yeah.
Yeah,
it's just been really fun.
That was a really interesting point on it, was just sort of learning about how I also like books where I get to learn things.
You know, we wouldn't be the Cup and Saucy Book Club if we don't talk about the saucy parts. I have seen actually a few reviews that refer to you as the raunchy, the naughty Hallmark movies. What do you think of that assessment? First of all, I think that that's accurate, but that's just from what I've read so far. So
yeah, I mean, I'm okay with it. They are raunchy. The Brady family they like to get down. I do take issue with some of the reviews that are horrified at the amount of sex in the books.
They're romance. Yeah.
I find it hard to believe that that was a surprise.
Right.
And there were some people who were so mad that Nicole is trying to masturbate in the bathtub. And I was like, well, I don't want to, I'm not going to apologize for that.
No, don't apologize for that. Not at all.
And, you know, we call them pearl clutchers. You know, there's always.
Oh, my heavens.
Yeah. There's going to be ones in every review that just go, oh, no, I can't look at that. You know,
Are you reading romance?
Why are you reading that particular part of romance? I mean, there are, you know, closed door romances, or, you know, they don't even get to the bedroom, let alone close the door on it.
What fun is that?
You know, and if you want them set in Pennsylvania, there's a whole subgenre of Amish and Mennonite romances. So that's for
true.
The pearl clutchers. But the rest of them, we should expect a certain level of sauciness coming into, you know, most books in the romance, in the world of romance. So keep doing your raunchy Hallmark movies, Laney, because there will be readers for it.
Well, and, you know, for me, it feels like a political statement to make books that center women's pleasure. And it felt extra so to center the pleasure of older women like Celeste and Beth. And I just don't know how I could have told their stories without them reclaiming that sexual part of their identity. Like, it was really special for me to write Elizabeth, you know, experiencing an orgasm for the first time in so many years after maybe thinking she never could do that again. So I don't know. It felt really vital for me to have that be on the page.
For sure. Unfortunately, yes, it is. It is a bit of a political statement, but it's not like it's not happening out in the world, you know.
I just find it ridiculous that people would have issue with with women seeking pleasure, no matter what their age. I mean, I think that
they have issue with women's body autonomy. So, you know,
I mean, there's that, but I also find that ridiculous. So,
yeah. Have you ever seen the Netflix show Grace and Frankie with Lily Tomlin
yes.
and Jane Fonda?
Yes.
The fact that they make that they start a company that makes a vibrator for postmenopausal women or women with arthritis.
I love it. It's just like,
yes, where is this product? I need this product.
Right.
You know?
Well, you could probably get it from Mona at Buzz Me In. That's my expert that I
Yes. and Mona, we will give you a free plug.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And probably business.
And definitely business.
I hope so. She's got everything.
If you want to just take it out of, okay, so let me step on the soapbox here for a second, but it's the same thing as, you know, clothes for plus size women. It's like you are, call yourself capitalists, yet you are ignoring a huge segment of the market that has spending money that can, you know, buy your products and has the wherewithal to buy your products. And yet you're just ignoring it because it doesn't conform to whatever you think life should be. So stepping off soapbox now.
I've never been very good at following the rules.
We love that.
Yep, we love it. We are here for the rebels. So we are here for all of that, Lainey. And we're so. Let's take a hypothetical here a second, Lainey. They're making a movie of your life,
Okay.
What genre is it and who's directing it?
Oh, boy. I mean, I would love it if Shonda Rhimes would direct it.
Mm.
Oh, love that. And
I would hope it would be a comedy. There's so many things in my life that feel ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Like most of the things that my sons do.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it would be like a real physical comedy directed by Shonda Rhimes.
I love it. Okay, and taking this back to the books, someone else is writing your life story. Who is it? And then who do you want to narrate the audiobook?
Whew, boy,
I know,
that's a tough, tough one. I wasn't
tough
ready.
Questions.
Yeah.
I'll give you a minute on that one.
Okay, well, I mean, probably Erin Mallon should narrate. Mm-hmm. And
correct.
Then...
Yep.
Maybe the other gals in my shared world in Farm to Forking should co-write the movie.
Love.
I like it.
Yep.
Because they've already got this great insight into my writing process and my brain.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I love it. Do we have release dates for Farm to Forking for the first book?
Yeah, so mine will come out May 9th, and then Liz Alden's will come out June 13th.
Mm-hmm.
Karen Gray's will come out July 11th. Erin Mallon's will come out August 8th, and Emberly will finish up the farm season on September 12th.
Nice. I like how that follows an actual farm season.
Yeah, I love it. And we will put all of those on the show notes, but also say the caveat that dates are subject to change because, you know, life happens. So these are the best estimates for release dates as we have them.
This is the plan.
This is the plan. Yeah. And so we mentioned at the beginning of the show that you are going to be at Readers Take Denver, and we are so excited to get to meet you there.
Yeah.
Where else do you have any other book events coming up this year?
Yes, I am doing BRAE, and that is in Columbus, the first weekend of May.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that stands for like book reader author event or
book author reader event. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
And then I'm doing Writers on the River in Peoria, Illinois in July.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And we'll have links to those as well in the show notes. And I want to say thank you so much, Lainey, for being on the show.
Yeah, for sure.
It was so much fun to talk to you, and I love the way that we connected, and we're looking forward to meeting you in Denver. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, I cannot wait.
Yep, and I will bring my kettle, and you bring your AeroPress, and we will make some coffee.
I can't wait. Even if it's 4 in the afternoon, I'll do it.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
If it's Jen, like if it's anything like Jen at normal book conventions, she'll be up all the time anyway.
Yeah, I'll be up the whole event. So
she'll need that coffee.
I tend not to sleep at book events, so
it is elusive.
Yeah, it's, well, you know, it's the whole.
She just gets so excited.
I get very excited, and I can't sleep in any bed that isn't mine.
Same.
Yeah, so hotel beds, no matter how comfortable, it's just not home.
Right.
So, but thank you so much for being on the show, Lainey. We've loved having you. This has been a great conversation.
Thank you all so much.
Yeah.
And all of the information about Lainey, links to her socials, links to all of the books that we've talked about, and purchase links as well, will be on the show notes page on our website, cupandsaucybooks.com.
You can follow us on social media at Cup and Saucy Books. We are on Instagram and TikTok. If you like what you hear, review and subscribe to the show on your favorite pod platform.
Thank you for joining us for the Cup and Saucy Book Club. Join us next time for more great conversations about the world of books.
And likely tangents.
Happy reading.
Cheers.